Hello all, this is JC3 from Is This Real? Do you want to start your own podcast? Then look no further than Buzzsprout.com. We here at Green Hour Media use Buzzsprout, and we love the team at Buzzsprout. They are all about helping you succeed. Buzzsprout gets your show listed in every major podcast platform. Follow the link in our show notes to let Buzzsprout know that we sent you. It gets you a $20 paid Amazon gift card if you sign up with a paid plan and helps support our show. Join us and over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout.com to get your message out to the world.
From the Keith Vincent Cahill Studios in Patterson, New Jersey, Green Hour Media proudly presents Is This Real? Tonight, the cult of Charles Manson. And now your host, JC3.
Hi everybody, I'm JC3, and do you want to ignite your Valentine's Day this year? Well, do so with AdamandEve.com. How are you planning to spice things up in the bedroom? Check this out. When you go to AdamandEve.com and select almost any one item, you'll get that one item at 50% off. But that's not all. When you select your one item, you'll also get a free Valentine's Day lover's kit. That includes a gift for him, a special gift for her, and a gift we know both of you will love. The lover's kit also includes six free movies. Six free movies plus free shipping. So head on over to AdamandEve.com and use the offer code QUESTION. That's QUESTION. Without it, there'll be no free Valentine's Day stuff. Now remember, that's QUESTION. QUESTION for 50% off, six free movies, a lover's kit, and free shipping. That's Question at AdamandEve.com. From all of us at Is This Real and Green Hour Media, enjoy your Valentine's Day. Welcome, welcome, welcome everybody to another fantastic episode of Is This Real?
Is This Real?
Tonight's episode, as you heard Big Joe say, we are talking about the Manson family and the Manson family murders. Mm-hmm. This week in Is This Real Cult Land, we are talking about the Manson family murders. First off and foremost, though, this episode is dedicated to our late great uncle, Uncle Pat. Rest in power, big man. We love you. And in the booth tonight, we have Big Joe. Big Joe, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
We have Mr. West. Mr. West is in the building.
Fuck off!
Oh, the Pope is back for this week again.
I'm the Pope.
And I'm JC3. So let's get started into this. Dad, you're the only one in this booth. We've said this multiple times through a couple episodes. You're the only one in this booth right now that was live during the Manson family murders.
That's true. I wasn't there for the Inquisition.
You weren't there, Wes.
You don't know me, my nigga.
I do know you.
You don't know where I've been and where I haven't been.
Well, I can tell you one thing. You ain't been to the Manson family murders.
You don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you are, then you know what?
The only person I feel like
you're better than I thought.
I'll be honest, though. The only person in this booth right now that I feel like could join the Manson family and would be accepted would be West.
Probably.
I don't think they would accept Anthony. I think he's too extreme for them.
I think he'd Muay Thai Manson.
Yo, imagine you're the first person in Muay Thai Manson.
I'd be like, yo, Charlie, you a bitch.
Pop. All right. So.
But the drugs.
So what do we know about Charles Manson? What do you know about Charles Manson, Dad?
Well, there's a lot to know. I mean, first of all, he was born in 1934. He was born to basically a prostitute and who was a criminal. She got picked up on a lot of charges. It's recently found out, not so much recently, in the last couple of years, Charles' father, his biological father, was found out. They found out who that man was. The woman in question, her last name was Maddox, Ada Kathleen Maddox from Ashland, Kentucky. She gave birth to Charlie. His father was known as Colonel Walker Henderson Scott Sr. That's his biological father. And that's not a colonel in the Army. That's just a name he got. That's the name of his
like Colonel Parker, like from Elvis. Like he didn't...
Was Colonel Parker's real name? I don't even know. Well,
no,
anyway.
No, he wasn't, because he was an immigrant who like duped everyone and he gave himself the title of Colonel.
Well, no, this guy was like, no, that's his name, Colonel Walker Henderson Scott Sr. He died in 1954. Along came Manson's stepfather. Let's see, what's his name? His name was William Eugene Manson, married Kathleen Maddox and took the surname of Manson. He was a laborer at a dry cleaning business. Manson was shoved around as a kid. His mother sent him off to live with other people, his relatives. He never had a sense of... now, again, I don't want anybody to think that this is coming out, oh, boo, poor Charlie. I'm just giving you his background. Okay, he was brought up in a lot of crazy stuff. At 9 years old, he was sent to a boarding school, and he burned the boarding school to the ground.
As one would do.
He set it
on
fire.
The whole boarding school?
No, he set it on fire. That was one of his first crimes. Later on, he went on to petty larceny, robbing cars, doing this, doing that. Found his way to California.
Wasn't this motherfucker a serial killer?
No. He was just a really bad egg.
We're going to get to that. In fact, if you go into the Wikipedia entry, as far as murders, victims, nine murdered by proxy, which means he didn't physically murder anybody. Now, there's stories out of that time with a guy by the name of Shorty Hayes, who worked at the Respond Ranch where the family was living, went missing. They later found him cut up in I don't know how many pieces.
Question. So where did this guy grow up? Kentucky?
He grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Ohio.
All bad things come from Ohio.
So it makes sense.
Poor Ohio. Ohio.
And then he made his way over to California.
Okay. I'll give you
Go
on.
So his whole base of operations was in California?
Yes.
When he got to be old enough to get to California. However, getting to that point, he was mixed up in a lot of stuff. I'm going to give you a little list here. He had a job delivering message for Western Union in an attempt to be honest. However, he quickly began to supplement his money through theft. He was eventually caught in 1949. A sympathetic judge sent him to Boys Town, a juvenile facility in Omaha, Nebraska.
Omaha.
And that was also run by the Catholic priests. Okay. After 4 days at Boys Town, he and fellow student Blackie Nelson obtained a gun and stole a car. They used to commit a crime, a couple of robberies along the way. I'm trying to put this all together. He was sent.
How old was he when he got sentenced to juvie?
1949, and he was born in 34.
So he's 15 years old.
Yeah, 15 years old. So his crime spree started at 9, and then he attempted to be honest, but he found himself in a situation where he couldn't be.
His first imprisonment is very interesting. So, on a psychiatric's recommendation, Manson was transferred in October 51 to the National Bridge Honor Camp. It's a minimum security institution in Virginia. His aunt, who he was sent to his aunt and uncle when his mother didn't want him anymore. And his aunt came and visited him and told administrators that she would let him stay at her house and help him find work. Manson had a parole hearing scheduled for February 52. However, in January, he was caught raping a boy at knife point.
He was raping a boy at knife
point. He was a bisexual. He was bisexual.
Manson was transferred to the federal reformatory in Petersburg, Virginia, where he committed a further 8 serious disciplinary offenses, 3 involving homosexual acts. He was then moved to a maximum security reformatory in Chillicothe, Ohio.
Take your motherfucking dick out.
Where he was expected to remain until his release on his 21st birthday. So he did this shit just like Dad stopped drinking before 21. He did all of this before 21.
Damn.
Yeah, he was very...
He had a rap sheet.
At least you weren't raping, dog.
No, that's not part of my culture.
He was just a bad egg.
And then in 55, he was released in May of 54, and he lived with his aunt and uncle in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. In 55...
So this is when he's like 21, 22?
21, 22. In 55, he married a hospital waitress named Rosalie Jean Willis. she died in 2009. Around October, around 3 months after he and his pregnant wife arrived in Los Angeles in a car he stole in Ohio.
Nice.
Gotta provide for the family somehow.
Manson was again charged with a federal crime for taking the vehicle across state lines, because that is a federal crime, you know. After a psychiatric evaluation, he was given 5 years probation. Manson's failure to appear at the Los Angeles hearing on an identical charge filed in Florida resulted in his March 56 arrest in Indianapolis. This man is all over the map.
This man is the definition of I don't give a fuck.
He literally...
He's a nomad.
Let's see. LA, California, Florida, Ohio, West Virginia, like
Indianapolis.
He wanted to commit a crime in almost every state.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And he was imprisoned again. His probation was revoked, and he was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment in Terminal Island, at Terminal Island in Los Angeles.
That's where he got most of his ideas.
Oh, at Terminal Island? I was going to say, like, so where does the whole, like, because he's a cult leader, so where's the whole, like, his culty cult thing comes from?
Where does the ideology come
from? His ideology is what they what he wanted to do, and the plan we'll talk about in the second part is Helter Skelter, and we'll turn
you got to build up to that.
That's what I'm saying. Right. In the second part, we'll talk about what Helter Skelter is. But while he was in prison, Rosalie gave birth to their son, Charles Manson Jr. I wonder where he is. He's dead? Oh, he killed himself.
He killed himself a couple years ago.
Well, this is 1993. That's a little more than a couple years ago. During his last year at Terminal Island, Manson received visits from Rosalie and his mother, who were now living together in Los Angeles. In March 57, when the visits from his wife ceased, his mother informed him Rosalie was living with another man. Less than 2 weeks before a scheduled parole hearing, Manson tried to escape by stealing a car. He was given 5 years probation, and his parole was denied. So that's his first imprisonment and his first deal with prison. There is a second deal with prison.
Well, didn't you just read that? You just read 58.
Because it's all on the same charge, right. They count that as one imprisonment.
He was caught being a pimp at one point, too.
That's what? His second imprisonment.
My
and we're getting
God,
here now.
He diversified his portfolio.
Manson, 5 years. Manson received. So, why they classify that his first imprisonment? Because he was released on parole, right. And then he violated his parole, so that he continued that first sentence.
Okay, gotcha.
His second imprisonment, Manson received 5 years parole in September 58, the same year in which Rosalie received a decree of divorce. By November, he was pimping a 16-year-old girl and receiving additional support from a girl with wealthy parents.
So he was pimping a child out, and not only that, but the parents were funding him?
Another girl.
Not yet.
It's not the same girl.
Yeah, okay. You can't shit where you gotta keep your sources separate.
Absolutely.
In September 59, he pleaded guilty to a charge of attempting to cash a forged U.S. Treasury check.
Yep.
Which he claimed to have stolen from a mailbox. This man is... That's mailbox crimes now?
He stole it, but that's okay.
Isn't that a...
That's
a felony as
that's,
well, too.
That's a felony also.
Those all federal charges.
Federal charge. That's yeah,
stealing mail.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The latter charge was later dropped. He received a 10-year suspended sentence and probation after a young woman named Leona Ray Candy Stevens... Her name is Candy. She had to be a stripper. Who had an arrest record for prostitution.
Yep, bingo.
Made a tearful plea before the court that she and Manson were deeply in love and would marry if Charlie were free.
Of course they were.
Before the year's end, the woman did marry Manson, possibly so she would not be required to testify against him.
That's not a knock on sex workers, by the way. You keep America running. We applaud your efforts. We love you.
I don't respect you.
That's enough out of you.
Okay, rest.
I can have an army of lonely of only
you know what?
Hoes raining down
Dad,
in a moment.
Dad, this is the reason why you liked that other episode when he wasn't here, right? For moments like this.
I'm not saying a word. I'm numb today, so I don't pay attention.
Manson took Leona and another woman to New Mexico for purposes of prostitution.
Get the donkey show going.
They're starting it up
That's
again.
That's in Mexico. That's actually Tijuana.
That's Tijuana, not New Mexico.
Well,
for resulting in him... being held and questioned for violating the Mann Act. Anthony, please let me know what the Mann Act is.
Okay.
The
Mann Act is about traffic. It's a white slave traffic act.
White slave?
In its original form, the act made it a felony to engage in interstate or foreign commerce, transport of any woman or girl for the purpose of prostitution or debauchery, or for any other immoral purpose. It's a violation of human trafficking, essentially it is.
Though he was released, Manson correctly suspected that the investigation had not ended. When he disappeared in violation of probation, a bench warrant was issued, an indictment for violation of the Mann Act in April 60. Following the arrest of the woman, of one of the women for prostitution, Manson was arrested in June in Laredo, Texas. Add Texas to the big board, where he was returned to Los Angeles for violating his probation on the check casting charge. He ordered to serve another 10 year sentence.
My God!
Well, his original 10 year sentence because it was a suspended sentence.
I hear a boom coming up, but God,
what do you mean a boom coming up?
Let me take the next bunch.
Sure.
Okay. After Manson unsuccessfully appealed the revocation of his probation in June 1961, he was transferred again to the Los Angeles County Jail, the United States Penitentiary at McNeil Island, Washington. There he took guitar lessons from Baker Karpus gang leader Alvin Creepy Karpus. Oh, God.
Hold on. Why was his nickname Creepy?
Because he was a creep.
You know, I never got into...
Anthony, you're a creep. Do you want to relate?
Anyway.
Well, I mean, he had his fingerprints removed, Creepy Karpus.
Interesting.
Yeah, he didn't want anybody, mimicking him. So he had his fingerprints removed.
Okay, well, the important thing was he obtained contact information of Philip Kaufman, a producer at Universal Studios in Hollywood. Now, that moment right there is fueling what the Manson family became. And I'll explain that later. Amongst Manson's fellow prisoners during this time was future actor Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo was in prison?
You didn't know that?
Yeah, with the two participating in several hypnosis sessions together.
Yeah, no, Danny Trejo was in prison for like heroin or something.
Reason why he plays bad guys in movies is to show people like, don't be a bad guy, because they're always getting killed. Like, he's killed in like almost every major role he's in.
Yeah, but that's Machete.
Yeah, but... So? Sorry, go ahead, Dad.
Anyway, they were involved in several hypnosis sessions. Manson's mom moved to Washington State to be closer to him during the McNeil Island incarceration, working nearby as a waitress. Now, the Mann Act was eventually dropped, okay? The attempt to cash the treasury check was still a federal offense. Manson's 61 annual review noted he had a tremendous drive to call attention to himself. Another point in what later went on to become who he was. Let's see.
I do have a question, though.
Go ahead.
When does... Because I know he got involved with one of the Beach Boys, right?
Dennis Wilson.
When did he do that? Was before prison or after prison?
That was after prison.
All right. So it does say down here that he did... I mean, this is an urban legend, so let's take it for what it is.
It's not. Go ahead.
He auditioned unsuccessfully for the Monkees in late 65.
When he was imprisoned.
For the what?
I've never heard that.
The Monkees?
Yeah.
You never heard of the Monkees? They're a rock band from all...
They're made for TV rock band. Made for TV rock band. From the 60s, yeah. Hey, with the Monkees. Well, anyway.
Yeah, Manson was still locked up at that time, so that's not true.
Okay. In June of 66, Manson was sent to the second time to Terminal Island in preparation for an early release. By the time of his release day of March 21st, 67, I'm sorry, he has spent more than half of his life, 32 years, in prisons and other institutions.
Jesus Christ.
He knew nothing but jail. He grew up in jail, knew nothing but jail, knew how to get out of certain situations, and... to lessen the load of the situations he got involved with. He went on to Haight-Ashbury in 1968, which was that was the year of the Flower Power movement and the Summer of Love, where everything was hippies and drugs and whatever. And
a lot of patchouli that year.
Fun fact, when I was in elementary school, we had to nickname our lunchroom tables, and our nickname was Flower Power.
We'll be back after a quick break.
I'm Howard Dory.
And I'm Jess Dory.
And we host Plotting Through the Presidents. We take deeply researched, deeply irreverent dives into the myths, mysteries, and scandals of the men and women who shaped America.
Join us as we dive deep into topics like
the undeniable riz of Aaron Burr.
The what now?
And the odd feeding habits of everyone's favorite founder,
John Adams.
Subscribe and follow Plotting Through the Presidents now to plot along with us.
Find out more at plodpod.com.
I hope that's a real good tidbit for the Jeopardy show in about 30 years.
Yes.
But yeah,
it's to lighten up the mood somehow.
So the mood's fine. We are going to take a short break. So in the next section, what we'll talk about is the cult formation, the Manson family formation.
Yeah.
And how the murders went. So it might be a little bit longer of a section, but this is where the interesting part takes, because I still don't know how the fuck they got away with it as cleanly as they did.
What's your definition of getting away with it? We'll figure it out on the other side. All
right, so we'll be right back. Please go listen to some of our sponsors.
Coming up next on Is This Real?
So is that proving the conspiracy that Manson was recruited by CIA?
Not proving a theory. What it is basically
is a loose connection.
It's a loose connection. So it's reported that the CIA and the CIA was reportedly
involved.
But the National Institute of Health was funding these two guys and the Half-Mink, whatever the fuck. Again, I don't know. To study the effects of LSD and methamphetamine on these counterculture groups. And one of those groups was Manson and his followers.
Hey everybody, we're just letting you know that we have new merch in our store. Go to greenhourmediastore.myspreadshop.com, greenhourmedia.org, or the link in the bio for our first ever logo drop. The Cryptid Collection is here. Get your favorite cryptids such as Bigfoot, Mothman, Nessie, the Yeti, or the Jersey Devil on t-shirts, hats, or mugs. You can also get all of our podcast logos on various items as well. Remember, that's greenhourmediastore.com. myspreadshop.com, greenarrowmedia.org, or the link in the bio. New episodes of Is This Real drop Sundays at 8. Question everything.
Hi everybody, I'm JC3, and do you want to ignite your Valentine's Day this year? Well, do so with adamandeve.com. How are you planning to spice things up in the bedroom? Check this out. When you go to adamandeve.com and select almost any one item, you'll get that one item at 50% off. But that's not all. When you select your one item, you will also get a free Valentine's Day lover's kit. That includes a gift for him, a special gift for her, and a gift we know both of you will love. The lover's kit also includes 6 free movies. 6 free movies, plus free shipping. So head on over to adamandeve.com and use the offer code QUESTION. That's QUESTION. Without it, there'll be no free Valentine's Day stuff. Now remember, that's QUESTION. QUESTION for 50% off, 6 free movies, a lover's kit, and free shipping. That's QUESTION at adamandeve.com. From all of us at Is This Real and Green Hour Media, enjoy your Valentine's Day.
And we're back with the lovers of machines. No, let's continue this discussion on the Manson family as we talked about.
Do you know Chucky studied Scientology?
Yeah.
Was it called Scientology when he studied it, or was it like a different practice?
No, it was still Scientology then.
He knew Ronald.
He knew it for about five. He did it for about 5 years. Like, that's where, like, some of his ideas about running a cult, that's where it came from.
Fucking Scientologist.
Scientology.
Now we're gonna talk about Scientology. I think with the season finale, I think we're talking about Scientology.
Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's what we have
somewhere in there.
Interesting.
But for this episode, I know, you know, we talked about his upbringing and how he spent most of his life in prison, basically before starting this family. So how did he get to know the people in which he started the family with.
Okay, that happened in 60, or late 68.
Is this when the family also gets involved too?
Yeah, what happened was
he's not really a family.
He was still up in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco.
Hold on, Dad. They're not like blood relatives. Not like his family came over.
But
like,
they're
hey,
called
Chucky.
The Manson family.
Well, I know that. You know, basically what I always thought the Manson family were, it was a cast of runaways, people who were, just went to Los Angeles, didn't have a place to live, stuff like that.
Bums.
Stuff like that. All right, I'll give you a little synopsis if you really want to get into
it. He's not wrong.
What he did was he took runaway children, runaway girls, made them strip down, and you know, like their families would say you're ugly or whatever. And he would make these girls strip down, give them acid, and tell them that they were beautiful and that you have purpose. I'm now your husband or your leader or your I am your property owner. I am the one that's going to help you through
Epstein
this.
Without the money or the island.
And they went along with it. He brainwashed these kids, and it to do so much. I mean, if you can brainwash somebody to kill for you, you're good.
According to Susan Atkins,
or insane.
According to Susan Atkins, the members of the family became convinced that Manson was a manifestation of Jesus Christ and believed in his prophecies concerning an imminent apocalyptic race war.
So let's get into Wes, because I love Wes's reaction.
Oh,
so
he's
almost
gonna love this section.
Yeah. Let's get into the formation of the cult and like how they met each other and how what you know, where he started it, and then we'll get into Helter Skelter, his big idea. Because, Wes, you're going to love Helter Skelter. Not that you're going to love it.
There's a little more before that. Let's take it in you know.
Just the name itself sounds crazy.
Right about now, you got it. In 1968, he started to make a move to Los Angeles. Okay, he's living in a Spahn Ranch, I believe it is, up in the Hollywood Hills. He got involved with Dennis Wilson and the Beach Boys. Dennis Wilson was driving through Malibu when he noticed two female hitchhikers, Krenwinkle and Ella Jo Bailey. He picked them up and dropped them off at their destination. On April 11th, Wilson noticed the same two girls hitchhiking again, and this time took them to his home at 14400 Sunset Boulevard. Now, Dennis Wilson, of course, is the drummer for the Beach Boys, one of the Wilson brothers, first one to actually pass away. He drowned in 1980. He got involved that way. Manson decided at some point that he was going to move into his house because if Manson thought he needed help to get a record deal. Terry Melcher was a producer. Terry Melcher was the son of Doris Day. He produced some stuff for the Beach Boys. So Manson, and he also produced for the Birds as well, Manson believed that if he can infiltrate Brian Wilson, give him drugs and if he can do all this stuff, he would get his record contract, which is basically what was driving Charlie very early on. He wanted that record contract, and that's exactly what led him to the murders. But we'll get to that later.
Well, you may be skipping a little bit because what? One thing I do find as I'm reading this right here that's very important is that he moved to Berkeley from Los Angeles, and this is 67 when he was released, and he got involved. In the Haight-Ashbury Free Medical Clinic.
Okay.
And he he went there frequently. Roger Smith, as well as the founder of Half Mink, whatever the hell you want to call it, David Smith, received funding from the National Institute of Health. And reportedly the CIA, to study the effects of drugs like LSD and methamphetamine on the counterculture movement in San Francisco. In San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district, the patients at the Half-Mick became subjects of their research, including Manson and his expanding group of mostly female followers who came to see Roger Smith regularly.
So is that proving the conspiracy that Manson was recruited by CIA?
Not proving a theory. What it is basically
is a loose connection.
It's a loose connection. So it's reported that the CIA and the CIA was reportedly
involved. They were involved.
But the National Institute of Health was funding these two guys and the half-mink, whatever the fuck. Again, I don't know. to study the effects of LSD and methamphetamine on these counterculture groups. And one of those groups was Manson and his followers.
Well, that's where he
so they were
up,
tested as guinea pigs at some point.
That's where he met and picked up as followers Tex Watson, Mary Bruner, Bobby Beausoleil, and Leslie Van Houten, along with Susan Atkins, Krenwinkel, and Van Houten, later to play a key role in the Manson murders. So, yeah, the family basically formed out of that. You're right. I apologize for skipping over that.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I mean, also, he received permission from Roger Smith to move from Berkeley to Haight-Ashbury.
Ashbury, yeah.
He first took LSD and would use it frequently during his time there. David Smith, who had studied the effects of LSD and amphetamines in rodents, wrote that the change in Manson's personality during this time was the most abrupt Roger Smith had observed in his entire professional career. Mm-hmm. Manson also read the book Stranger in a Strange Land, a science fiction novel by Robert Heinlein, inspired by the burgeoning free love philosophy in Haight-Ashbury. During the Summer of Love, Manson began preaching preaching his own philosophy based on a mixture of Stranger in a Strange Land, the Bible, Scientology, Dale Carnegie, and the Beatles, which quickly earned him a following. He may have also borrowed some of his philosophy from the process of the Church of the Final Judgment, whose members believed Satan would become recounseled to Jesus, and they would come together at the end of time to judge humanity.
Wow. So he got a lot of influence from a lot of, you know, eclectic places.
Yes, like the far reaches of, like, he, first of all, he was on LSD.
Right. That's a good foundation.
He was on LSD. He was
Summer of Love. Hey.
Hold on. Summer of Love. It's free love everywhere. People just fucking whoever.
Free LSD. CIA was footing the bill.
The Bible, a book, Scientology, Dale Carnegie, and the Beatles.
So music, religion, occultism, and a little bit of that.
Literature.
Literature and some drugs.
And you're interpreting all that while high on LSD.
Uh-huh.
He had the makings to be the most interesting person ever.
Wes goes, I think I can make a cult. Would you be a follower of the cult?
Think about it.
The cult of West?
Think about it.
Dude, that's amazing
think
sounding.
Think how dangerous that is. It's like,
that's your first album.
The cult of West. Think how dangerous that is. It's like, you know what I mean? Like,
I'm frightened.
I kind of got something going for me, you know what I mean? Like, I have a way with words. Look at my face.
You're good looking.
Right? You know what I mean? Like,
all right, let's get back into it. So Anthony did say that he was involved in Scientology, which obviously he was. He completed 150 hours of auditing. His right-hand man, Bruce Davis, worked for the Church of Scientology headquarters in London from November 68 to April 69.
Oh, I didn't know he was international as well.
Yes.
My man's just crossing oceans.
But, yeah, so now we get to the San Francisco followers, Dad. Do you want to pick it up from there?
Well, at that point, he moved into the Hollywood Hills, like I said, Spahn Ranch. But before that, what happened was with Dennis Wilson at his house.
Wait, how did he get the money for all this shit?
Well, I'm getting to that right now.
Funded by the CIA.
Okay, Wilson, he actually moved into Dennis Wilson's house. Eventually, Wilson distanced himself and said that, this guy's crazy. I can't get involved with him. And he went to Santa Monica, and he lived in a basement.
I'm a beach boy, damn it.
Okay. And then
Santa Monica.
What happened at that point was he decided that he left the Manson family at his house. They stole most of his possessions, selling him or doing whatever. And then 3 weeks later, Manson was evicted by the leaseholder of the house. So he was gone from that house. And then Dennis Wilson was out. He still couldn't go back to that house. The band manager for the Beach Boys, Nick Grillo, recalled that Wilson became concerned after Manson had gotten too much heavier drug situation, taken a tremendous amount of acid, and Dennis wouldn't tolerate it and asked him to leave. Okay, this is before he left. In 2016, this is where it gets a little dark. A memoir by Mike Love, the lead singer of the Beach Boys at the time, said he saw Manson take an M16 and cut a man in half. burying half of them in a well. Now, I don't know how that... Dennis,
is an M16 that powerful?
Yeah.
Yeah. Melcher said that Wilson had been aware that the family were killing people and had been so freaked out that he just didn't want to live anymore.
I think you're jumping a little further.
He was afraid, Dad. He thought if he'd gone to the authorities, but he didn't, and the rest it happened.
He was scared.
Let's backtrack a little bit, because apparently... when he relocated to San Francisco, he became acquainted with Mary Bruner, 23-year-old graduate from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She was a library assistant at the University of California, Berkeley, making his living by panhandling, moved in with her. Manson then met teenage runaway Lynette Fromm.
Squeaky Fromm.
Nicknamed Squeaky.
And one little side note here. What do you remember? Squeaky
kind of a little young then.
Squeaky Fromm was she had an assassination attempt later on Gerald Ford. So she was
Did he call that too?
So she had political aspirations as well.
She had what?
Political aspirations as well.
Yeah.
According to a secondhand account, Manson overcame Bruner's initial resistance to him bringing other women in to live with them. Before long, they were sharing Bruner's residence with 18 other women. Manson targeted individuals for manipulation who were emotionally insecure and social outcasts.
I don't know about that. I mean, I live with one woman. I can't imagine 18.
Dude,
I feel that.
Manson established himself...
It's even worse when your girl has, like, multiple personalities. You got like a 5-for-1 deal.
This is the one that's very interesting to me. Ready?
What?
Manson established himself as a guru.
A guru.
And Haight-Ashbury Rich. During the summer of love was emerging as a signature hippie locale. Manson soon had the first of his groups of followers, most of them female. They were later dubbed the Manson family by Los Angeles prosecutor Vincent
Bugliosi.
Bugliosi.
The G is silent.
Okay, Manson allegedly taught his followers that they were the reincarnation of the original Christians, and that the establishment could be characterized as the Romans.
You know, honestly,
you're starting to follow him, aren't you?
No. I was just gonna go with I've done my fair share of
LSD
and drugs.
Yeah,
but
you never thought you were a reincarnation of Christ, huh?
But he's feeling much better now.
So, sometime around 67...
the drugs came down. I started sobering up.
He started using the alias Charles Willis Manson. And before the end of the summer, he and some of his followers began traveling to an old school bus that they have that they had adapted, putting color rugs and pillows in place of the many seats that they have removed. They eventually settled in the Los Angeles areas of Topanga Canyon, Malibu, and Venice along the coast. A nice area to sit there in.
Lovely. Yeah.
Venice Beach. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Never been there.
Yeah, this was before the prices went up.
Yeah, in 67, Bruner became pregnant by Manson. On April 15th, 68, she gave birth to their son, who she named Valentine Michael. In a condemned house where they were living in Topanga Canyon, she was assisted by several of the young women from the fledgling family. Sorry. Bruner, like most members of the group, required a number of aliases and nicknames, including Marioche, Aush, Mother
Wish,
Mary, huh?
Wish.
It's French.
Mother Mary, Manson, Linda D. Manson, and Christine Marie Yutch.
Mother Manson sounds pretty decent.
Mother Manson. In his book Love Needs Care, about his first time at the Half Mink, David Smith claimed that the Manson attempts to reprogram his followers' minds to submit totally to his will through the use of LSD and unconventional sexual practices. Yep. What the fuck does that mean?
Rape.
It can mean sodomy. It can mean
Isn't sodomy when you're like sticking things in people?
It's butt sex.
Butt sex.
It could be. I want you to wear this gimp suit and duck mask and these flippers.
Wear this furry outfit.
Yeah, it could be a whole bunch of weird stuff.
Duck butter.
Okay.
It could be doing something with a washing machine.
So then, you would know that one.
Yes.
So then, my question is, he's starting to get traction. Uh-huh. So, does his cult just like go national, or does it just stick to like the California area?
It does. He doesn't start to become national until he gets really big. Like when he became involved.
So this is still his early upcoming.
Yeah, this is still around 67, 68, and he's still like he wanted to get people, especially with LSD. Like he would feed LSD to people.
Okay,
feed LSD, but he would give LSD to people, tell them they're beautiful, tell them like I'm the only one who sees potential in you, stuff like that. You know, basically that
emotional manipulation.
Yeah, that whole cult thing. It's like free sex with anybody. It was the summer of love, so free sex with anybody. Mm-hmm. And awesome. Basically, he would turn around and he's building it. And he what apparently this is what he said. Personally, he wanted to turn his followers into empty vessels that would accept anything he poured into them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Basically, you're stripping somebody down to...
He doesn't look at them as human.
Yeah, essentially. You have to strip somebody down to nothing in order to rebuild them in your image.
Yeah,
Manson... He's playing God.
Manson family member Paul Watkins testified that Manson would encourage group LSD trips... and take lower doses himself to keep his wits about him. Watkins stated that the Charlie's trips was to program us to submit. By the end of his stay in a height in April 68, Manson had attracted 20 or so followers under the supervision of Roger Smith and many of the staff at Hamka. I'm not going to say that correctly. The core members of Manson's following eventually included Bruner, Charles Tex Watson, former actor, Bobby Beausoleil. I said that correctly, Beausoleil?
Yes, you did.
A former musician and pornographer actor. Okay. Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Leslie Van Houten.
So this is... These are the former... These are like the...
This is the core of the group.
This is the Manson family.
So this... Or this is the people who would he trust the most, like his upper echelon of, like
those are like his lieutenants type.
His lieutenants, yeah. So he did get arrested a couple times for misdemeanors and stuff like that, drug charges. Dad talked about his involvement with the Beach Boys. Now let's get into Spawn Ranch, the Doomsday Beliefs, stuff like that. Dad, do you have anything about Spawn Ranch?
Spawn Ranch was an old movie ranch. Trying to figure out where it was used for westerns, and it was like the buildings had deteriorated by the 1960s. The ranch then derived revenue primarily from selling horseback rides. Female family members did chores around the ranch and occasionally had sex with Manson or sex on Manson's orders with the nearly blind 80-year-old George Spahn. I know there's going to be, he was the owner of the Spahn Ranch. The woman also acted as guides for him in exchange, spawned out Manson's group to live there at the ranch for free. And that's where basically became the launching pad for the family. That was their
headquarters.
Place, their headquarters.
So this is where we get into where they evolve into a cult.
They were a full-fledged cult at that time.
And this is still before the 70s.
The 69?
69.
Yeah.
Early 69.
We just landed on the moon. We were about to go on the moon, you know what I mean?
Well, that was a very, just a side note here, that was a very interesting summer because in that summer you had the moon landing, for those who believe it. Then you had
Damn you.
I'm just throwing it out there. That's the kind of show we are. Relax.
We landed on the moon.
Okay, that's fine. What else did they do? Woodstock.
And Woodstock, yeah.
The Manson murders. Now, Woodstock and Manson murders were almost the same time.
But just remember, a year prior, you had the assassination of Bobby Kennedy.
Right.
And the assassination of Martin Luther King.
I lived through it. I know.
So,
and our mother was born that year.
Oh, in 69, yeah. I mean, just throw that in there. In June, Mommy was born. So, yeah. So, the Doomsday Belief, and this is where it gets a little bit more interesting. The Manson family evolved into a doomsday cult where Manson became fixated on the idea of the imminent apocalyptic race war between America's black minority and the larger white population. A white supremacist, Manson told some of the family, that black people would rise up and kill the entire white population except for Manson and his followers. But they were not intelligent enough to survive on their own. They would need a white man to lead them. And so they would serve Manson as their master. In late 68, Manson adopted the term Helter Skelter from a song of on the Beatles' recently released White Album to refer to his upcoming war.
Now, just a side note here.
So this was like their call to arms. Helter yes. Skelter.
Yes.
Helter Skelter, of course we know, is on the White Album. It's on, you know, and if you spin it backwards, it says certain things. And so they say, I've never heard it. But they named this. They named this whole act that he was going to do with the, with the white supremacists. They named that Helter Skelter because he believed that the Beatles were talking to him through their music. Okay.
So that
we don't have a follower here.
Let's just put it in.
West is not a believer.
Let's put it into the thing here now. Because I've heard from some people that on TV and stuff like that, and just reading through the internet, that they had it flipped. The Beatles named it after the movement from Charles Manson.
No, that's not correct.
The Beatles brought this song out first,
Now, does anybody
shout out Maria?
Does anybody remember or does anybody know how he planned to start this race war?
Not a clue.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Wouldn't he go to like Washington, D.C. and just like start shooting and shit?
I'll tell you how he was going to do it. On the night of the murders, he was going to take their wallets. He was going to leave their wallets in a gas station, in a gas station where a black person would find it, in hopes that the black person would steal the money and use the credit cards, get caught, and that would be their incarnation to go after white people. That was his whole thing. That was his whole thoughts in a nutshell. That's how he was going to start this. And, you know, that's what we got.
Were the feds ever monitoring this guy? Well,
no.
I mean, the CIA was
if there is a lot of belief that the CIA was, we always had a tab on him because of the experiment. And from the two that were leading this, the LSD experiment. Now, I don't think that lasted through until the 70s.
MK Ultra stopped around 72, 75.
Yeah. So, again, the CIA knew about him, but he didn't start, quote unquote, murdering, well, at least sending hits on people. Because this is what to me, he's like a mob boss. He's sending out hits. Go and do that instead of actually doing himself. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the murders.
No dissing the mob. You guys do what you do.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not dissing the mob. I'm brown. They don't like me as it is.
Okay. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about the murders and where these people are now.
Dead.
I think some of them are. I know Charles Manson is, but thank
you. Oh, I thought you meant the victims.
No,
well,
no.
Susan Atkins is dead.
Okay, we'll talk about
it. We'll talk about it.
We're still on the
air. Oh, my God.
I went for the break. Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll be right back.
Coming up next on Is This Real?
Watson then stabbed Sebring 7 times. Forkowski's hands had been bound by a towel, but he freed himself and began struggling with Atkins, who stabbed him in the leg with a knife. He fought his way out of the front door onto the porch, but Watkins caught up with him, struck him over the head with a gun multiple times, stabbed him repeatedly, and shot him twice. Hey everybody, I'm JC3.
And I'm Mr. West.
And this episode is brought to you by Dubby. Made by professionals in the USA, Dubby was formulated to give you focus and energy with no jitters or crash.
No jitters.
Their formula contains vitamins, amino acids, including the patented Neurofactor. You know what Dubby doesn't give you?
What's that?
No calories.
No sugars.
No fillers. And no artificial flavors. When the raw ingredients
arrive to their FDA-registered and inspected facility that strictly adheres to GMP guidelines. They undergo a quarantine while a small sample of each ingredient is taken to test for any impurities, while also being tested to ensure that the ingredients are actually what they are supposed to be and have the proper dosage.
And once the ingredients pass all the tests, then they're cleared to get mixed into the formula. So head on over to w.gg and use our offer code ISTHISREALPC for 10% off your first order. That's dubby.gg and use the code ISTHISREALPC for 10% off. They have great flavors such as Galaxy Grenade, Dub Sludge, Passing Joy Tea, Monkey Madness, and Dragonade. My personal favorites.
Dragonade's right here. I got Dragonade right here.
Delicious.
Drink Dubby.
And be better.
These products are not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, this is JC3 speaking. If you want to know more about Is This Real Podcast and our parent company, Green Arrow Media, then visit greenarrowmedia.org. You can find and follow all of our social media pages through our website. If you love our content, then you can support us by subscribing to our YouTube channel and our Patreon page. Remember, that is greenarrowmedia.org.
We're back with the Manson family, and this is where it gets a little bit more interesting.
Yes.
Now, see, we're
a little
like,
bit more.
We're deep. We're deep diving. There we go.
Joey, I like to deep dive and dive deep.
I mean, you could say it either way. That's fine. Into more a lot of true crime this season, which I like. And the Manson family is always a true crime type thing, especially when you get into the murders, the Tate murders. But
the Tate murders.
Yes.
We're getting there.
But there's five different murders in which this family was aligned with.
Associated with
them? Associated. Same thing.
Let's
start it off with the Crow shooting, Dad.
Whoa.
What?
The Crow shooting.
You take that one.
So Tex Watson became involved in drug dealing and robbed a 22-year-old rival named Bernard Lotsapapa. Crow. Lotsapapa. Crow allegedly responded with a threat to kill everyone at Spawn Ranch in response. Manson shot Crow on July 1st, 1969 at Manson's Hollywood apartment. Manson's belief that he had killed Crow was seemingly confirmed by the news report of the discovery of the dump body on the Black Panther of a Black Panther in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Although Crow was not a member of the Black Panthers... Although Crow was not a member of the Black Panthers, Manson concluded that he had been an expected retaliation from the Panthers. He turned Spawn Ranch.
Wait. So these motherfuckers is really beefing with the Panthers?
Yes. Even though Crow was not a Black Panther, he expected retaliation from the Black Panthers because I'm guessing, I'm just going to put this, Bernard Crow is probably a black man in Los Angeles. And he was like, well, he has to be associated with the Black Panthers.
Prejudice and racism.
Yeah, so he was like, this is fucking, they're coming after us. So this is what he did.
Why'd you kill everyone in the house? Dave was home.
He turned Spawn Ranch into a defense camp, establishing night patrols by armed guards. Watson would later write, Blackie was trying to get at the chosen ones.
Can you explain that? What was that name one more time?
Blackie Lawless. No.
Blackie Lawless?
Not Blackie.
Holy shit!
Who's Blackie, Dad?
Oh my god!
Blackie was again, nearly. Blow my mind. I can't. I don't know.
This is getting worse.
I don't know if he's actually saying Blackie as like a derogatory term towards
You got to understand that is what Charles Manson did.
He was racist.
His nickname for black people was Blackie or Darkie. That's the kind of mentality.
So he's the source for that derogatory term, darky.
I'm sure he didn't come up with it, but he utilized it in all the interviews.
He utilized it very well. He was training people. Black people.
Tex Watson would later write.
He was training people in the art of racism.
Tex Watson would later write. Blackie was trying to get at the chosen ones. Manson brought in members of the Straight Satan's Motorcycle Club to act as security.
This nigga hired bikers.
But that was his downfall, and I'll tell you why.
Oh, that was the downfall.
Okay. What?
that was one of his downfalls, because in that biker, there was a biker by the name of Danny, I can't think of his last name, but he actually testified against Manson. And he lived on the ranch because there was sex on the ranch. There was girls on the ranch.
He's a biker. And he's like, fuck it, free pussy and
right.
meth.
So that's what he was doing. And that when it came meth? Time, he LSD. Was actually a witness for the prosecution.
LSD. All right.
And he begrudgingly did that. He didn't want to do it, but he did it.
Here's the second murder that this family's involved in.
Well, okay, wait. All this happened in one, like, this all didn't happen like one night or something, did
no,
it?
No.
34-year-old Gary Allen Hinman, a music teacher and a graduate student at UCLA, had previously befriended members of the family and allowed some to occasionally stay at his home in Topanga Canyon. According to Atkins, Manson believed Hinman was wealthy and sent her, Brunner, and Beausoleil,
yeah,
to Hinman's home to convince him to join the family and turn over the assets Manson thought Hinman had inherited. The three held...
Wait.
Extortion.
Okay, so this guy pretty much went to this rich family.
No, he thought he was rich.
He thought that he was rich.
Yeah, because he was a teacher at UCLA.
Yeah.
A music teacher at UCLA.
This is one of Charlie's...
1970.
Okay, right. So one of Charlie's people goes to this guy.
He sent three people
to go press this UCLA teacher.
Oh, wait, it gets good.
Yeah.
And because they thought he had money. And okay.
I'm just trying to make sure that I'm understanding. Yeah. The three held Hinman hostage for 2 days in late July 1969.
2 days.
As he denied having any money. During the time, Manson arrived with a sword and slashed his face and ear.
My God.
After that, both they stabbed Hinman to death, allegedly on Manson's instructions. Before leaving the residence, Beausoleil or one of the women used Hinman's blood to write political piggy on the wall and draw panther paw, a black panther symbol.
Yeah, one of the things you're missing on that is when Manson showed up with the sword, he slashed Hinman's ear off, and he had what's-her-name sew it back on with piano cord.
Oh!
Then they killed him.
Why would you put the ear back on in order just to kill
Pain.
The guy?
Pain.
Oh.
Yeah, if I sew something back onto you with a piano cord, it's going to hurt you.
Pain.
I would just start taking off, like, toes and shit.
Nah, well, dude, you got to go. You got to take fingers. You got to take fingernails, well, then strip the skin, then break the bone, and then take the tent.
Well,
I take a couple of teeth.
Hold on a minute. What you're not getting out of that is...
And that's just the first
Just
hand.
Cutting him up, is it going to do much for him to throw fear in him? Mm-hmm. He's just going to know he's going to die. Putting his ear back on, he's like, all right, they'll put my ear back on, so maybe they
there's
want
a chance
to live.
That it's that false sense of hope.
Exactly. And then they
yeah, you're sitting
kill.
There with, like, all right, well, they're and not
Charlie
surgeons.
Charlie did that
I'm...
very, very well.
Yeah.
According to Beausoleil, he came to Hinman's house to recover money paid to Hinman for mescaline provided to the straight Satans had supposedly been bad. Right. Beausoleil added that Brunner and Atkins, unaware of his intent, went along to visit Hinman. Atkins, in her 1977 autobiography, wrote that Manson directed Beausoleil, Brunner, and her to go to Hinman's house and get the supposed inheritance of $21,000. She said that 2 days earlier, Manson had told her privately, that if she wanted to do something important, she should kill Hinman and get his money.
Oh my.
Beausoleil was arrested on August 6, 1969, after he was caught driving Hinman's car. Dumbass. Police found the murder weapon in the tire as well.
Well, you gotta hide it somewhere.
Not a bad spot.
And now we get to the Tate murders.
Okay, so right now we just have two people dead right now.
Yes. Two people have been killed on the order of...
Mr. Manson.
I don't want to call him Mr. That's showing a sign of respect. I don't want to respect this man. So
on Mr.
Charles Manson.
Fuck him.
Yes. So on the night of August 8th, 1969, Watson took Atkins, Krenwinkle, and Linda Kasabian to 1050 Cello Drive.
All right. Before you get there, it's very important to add the reason why they went to Cello Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was Terry Melcher's old house. We spoke of him earlier, Doris Day's son.
Yes.
He was going to put fear in him. He didn't know that the Tates were there. He didn't know that was...
an occupied house or something.
Right. He thought that Terry Melcher had still lived there. And that's why he sent those people to do it. Go ahead, Joe.
Watson later claimed that Manson had instructed him to go to the house and totally destroy everyone in it. Totally destroy everyone in it.
Those are very, very specific.
Those are very direct orders. Destroy everyone
and
everything.
Do it as gruesome as you can.
Ooh. And they were very good at it.
Manson told the women to do as Watson instructed them. The occupants of the Trello Drive house that evening were Tate, age 26, who was 8.5 months pregnant, her friend and former lover, 35-year-old Jay Sebring, a noted celebrity hairstylist, Polanski's friend, or this is Roman Polanski, the director,
and
guy that made, what's it called?
The Pianist.
He wrote, at that point, there was a ton of stuff. He did,
this was before the, what was that one with the...
He did Rosemary's Baby.
That's the one. Okay. Yeah. That's the one I'm thinking of.
And before he was,
Sharon Tate was his wife.
And before he was diddling kids Jack Nicholson and shit.
But, Polanski's friend, 32-year-old,
he was.
Woodchef Friska,
Wojciech Frykowski.
There you go. And Frykowski's 25-year-old girlfriend, Abigail Ann Folger.
Abigail Folger, an heiress to the Folger Coffee Company.
Yeah, Folger's in your cup.
And Stephen Earl Parent.
Yeah, and Stephen Earl Parent.
Wait, so there's...
And daughter of Peter Folger.
So in this house, all those people that you just mentioned were victims?
Yes.
Victims.
Yep.
Here we go. Also present on the property are 19-year-old caretaker William Garrison and his friend, 18-year-old Stephen Earl Parent, as Dad said. Polanski was in Europe working on a film. Music producer Quincy Jones was a friend of Sebring who had planned to join him that evening before changing his mind.
God, we never got Thriller.
Yeah, we never got Thriller.
My God.
It's amazing.
Thank you, God.
Watson and the three women arrived at Cello Drive just past midnight on August 9th. Watson climbed a telephone pole near the entrance gate and cut the phone line to the house, pre-thinking. The group then backed their car to the bottom of the hill that led to the estate before walking back up to the house. Thinking that the gate might be electrified or equipped with an alarm, they climbed brushy embankment to the right of the gate and entered the grounds. They really planned this shit ahead, didn't they?
And just to cut you off, just to put a little point here, where the house was down like almost like a cul-de-sac, a dead-end street. So no one was going to know they were going to be there. They got to the dead-end street, they parked, they went in, they did their thing. And now
they did their thing. Unalived a bunch of people.
Without getting, we all know what they did. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You lost his train of thought. Anywho,
so this house, so they just went in there, you know, and so it was on a cul-de-sac. So pretty much like
nobody around.
So they have the environment to like help.
It was a dead-end street.
Yeah, a dead-end street. There was nobody around.
Okay, so no witnesses, no neighbors, no nothing.
Yeah, headlights approached the group from within the property, and Watson ordered the women to lie in the bushes. He stepped out and ordered the approaching driver, Parent, to halt. Watson leveled a .22 caliber revolver at Parent, who begged him not to hurt him. Claiming that he would not say anything, Watson lunged at Parent with a knife, giving him a defensive slash wound on the palm of his hand that severed tendons and tore the boy's watch off his wrist. He then shot him 4 times in the chest and abdomen, killing him in the front seat of his white 1965 AMC Ambassador Coupe. Watson ordered the women to help push the car up the driveway. That's one here. On Watson's direction, Atkins found the house's 3 other occupants with Krenwinkel's help and forced them to the living room. Watson began to tie Tate and Sebring together by their necks with a nylon rope which he found and which he had brought, then slung it over one of the living room's ceiling beams. Sebring protested the rough treatment of the pregnant Tate, so Watson shot him. Folger was taken momentarily back to her bedroom for her purse, and she gave the murderers $70. Watson then stabbed Sebring 7 times. Forkowski's hands had been bound by a towel, but he freed himself and began struggling with Atkins, who stabbed him in the leg with a knife. He fought his way out of the front door onto the porch, but Watkins caught up with him, struck him over the head with a gun multiple times, stabbed him repeatedly, and shot him twice. Kasabian had heard the horrifying sounds and moved toward the house from her position in the driveway. She told Atkins that someone was coming in an attempt to stop the murders. Inside the house, Folger escaped and Krenwinkel fled out of the bedroom door to the pool area. Krenwinkel pushed her and caught her in the front lawn, where she stabbed and tackled her to the ground. Watson then helped kill her. Her assailants stabbed her a total of 28 times. Forkowski struggled across the lawn, but Watson continued to stab him, killing him. Forkowski suffered 51 stab wounds.
Jesus.
He had been also struck 13 times in the head with the butt of Watkins' gun, which bent in the barrel and broke off one side of the gun grip, which was recovered at the scene.
I'm just going to say that man had that was a lot of resilience right there, bro. That's a lot of willpower to take 51 stabs, 13 bruises to the head, and break the gun.
I guarantee you, for the latter part of the stabbing, he was already dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was.
Oh, sorry, Anthony.
Like I said, before any of this started, when they first got into the house, they were asked, who are you people? And Watson looked at them and said, I'm the devil, and I'm here to do the devil's business. True. And then hell rained.
Yeah. In the house, Tate pleaded to be allowed to live long enough to give birth and offered herself as a hostage in an attempt to save the life of her unborn child. Instead, Atkins and Watson stabbed her 16 times, killing her. The coroner's inquest found that Tate was still alive when she was hanged with the nylon rope, although the cause of her death was determined as massive hemorrhage. While in Sebring's murder, it was found that he was hanged lifeless. According to Watson, Manson had told the women to leave signs something witchy. Atkins wrote pig on the front door in Tate's blood. Atkins claims that she did this to copycat the Hinman murder scene in order to get Beaulieu out of jail, who was in custody for the murder. And then you go on to the LaBianca murders.
Hold on. Before you get on to LaBianca, that night they also, Susan Atkins was probably, I mean, it's going to be hard to say this, but she was probably the most vicious out of all of them. Other than Tex Watson, who was fucking deranged. Susan Atkins actually Tate pleaded with her, please, you know, I want my baby to be born. Please don't kill me. And they insisted on, and they just killed her anyway. They were going to, literally at one point, they were going to cut the baby out because they felt the baby was innocent and they wanted to cut the baby out while she was alive. But they didn't do that. They just kept stabbing and stabbing and stabbing. And then eventually realized that, you know, this kid's the baby's going to be dead as well. And that was it. So as far as, I mean, up to that time in 1969, we never saw anything like this. There was nothing like this.
Nothing that brutal.
Yeah.
So that's what made this even more horrific. And like Joey said earlier, you're coming out of 1968 with all the killings and the total chaos of the country. So up to this point right now where we are at with you know, before the LaBiancas, this was fucking crazy.
So was this probably one of the first like mass killings country that like made people like more afraid?
Newspaper worthy.
Right.
Okay.
So you got to understand, you didn't have internet back then. So what you got through newsprint, you got through radio and TV. Yeah. It put people on notice in the California area. Like, what the fuck is going on? You know, if they can do this, then.
Well, now, is this.
Were
is,
we safe?
Is this. Isn't. Wait, isn't this also going on around the time of, like, the Zodiac killing?
I was just about to ask the same question.
And just all that sort of shit.
Zodiac killing came later.
In the 70s, I think the Zodiac killing
came.
Yeah,
or later 70s.
There was a few serial killers that were popping out of California around this time, weren't there?
You know.
I don't.
California's liberal.
You know what?
State,
I'm not going to say yes or no. I don't know. I can be honest with you. I can tell you that living through it, this was the scariest thing that anybody
let's
seen.
Let's just put it like this. I'm going to go through. I'm going to go through the LaBianca murders, and then I'm going to talk about there are suspected other murders, and then we're going to finish off of where these people are now.
Okay.
All right, good. The four murderers plus Manson, Leslie Van Houten, and Clem Grogan went for a drive for the following night. Manson was allegedly displeased with the previous night's murders. So
too
he
messy.
Told... Huh?
It was too messy after he told him to do... Yeah. You know.
Do you want my sweater that's over there?
No, I'm good.
So he told Kasabian to drive to a house at 3301 Waverly Drive and Los Feliz section of Los Angeles. Located next door to a home where Manson and family members had attended a party the previous year, it belonged to a 44-year-old supermarket executive, Lino LaBianca, and his 43-year-old wife, Rosemary LaBianca, co-owner of a dress shop. According to Atkins and Kasabian, Manson disappeared up the driveway and returned to say that he had tied up the house's occupants. Watson, Krenwinkel, and Van Houten entered the property. Watson claims in his autobiography that Manson went up alone and then returned to take him to the house with him. Manson pointed out a sleepy man through the window, and the two entered through the unlocked back door. Watson claims Manson rose the sleepy Lino LaBianca from the couch at gunpoint and had Watson bind his hands with a leather thong. Rosemary was brought into the living room from the bedroom, and Watson covered the couple's heads with pillowcases, which he held, which he bound in place with lamp cords. Manson left, and Krenwinkel and Van Houten entered the house. Watson had complained to Manson earlier of the inadequacy of the previous night's weapons. Watson sent the women from the kitchen to the bedroom where Rosemary LaBianca had been returned, while he went to the living room and began stabbing Lino LaBianca with a chrome-plated bayonet. Fucking bayonet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, he really came out there with a bayonet.
Oh, God. The first thrust went into his throat. Watson heard a scuffle in the bedroom and went in there to discover Rosemary LaBianca keeping the women at bay by swinging the lamp tied by her neck. He stabbed her several times with the bayonet, returned to the living room, and resumed attacking Lino, whom he stabbed a total of 12 times. He then carved the word war into his abdomen. Watson returned to the bedroom and found Krenwinkel stabbing Rosemary with a knife from the kitchen. Then Van Houten stabbed her approximately 16 times in the back and exposed her buttocks. Then Van Houten claimed at trial that Rosemary LaBianca was already dead during the stabbing. Evidence showed that many of the 41 stab wounds had in fact been inflicted post-mortem. Watson then cleaned off the bayonet and showered while Krenwinkel wrote Rise and Death to Pigs on the walls and Helter Skelter on the refrigerator door, all in LaBianca's blood. She gave Lino LaBianca 14 puncture wounds with an ivory-handled two-lined carving fork, which she left jutting out of his stomach. She also planked a steak knife in his throat.
Can I say something?
What?
This was a couple of years ago, maybe 10 or 12 years ago. It was during Sweeps Week. We were watching a special about Manson. It was on. It was you, me, Mom. I think you were there. Uh-huh. We're all watching this, and they did some unreleased photos, and one of them was the photo of this person with the fork sticking out of them, and I laughed, not because it was funny, but because he had a fucking fork sticking out of him, and the only thing I thought in my mind was, put a fork in him, he's dead, and I couldn't help it. I remember you and Joey and Mom all looking at me like, excuse the fuck out of me, why are you laughing right now? And I'm like, I know, I'll see myself out.
Yeah, so they did all that, and then they're also asshole. They're also the other one that they been confirmed to do was the Shea murder. 35-year-old Hollywood stuntman Donald Jerome Shorty Shea was murdered on August 26, 1969, more than 2 weeks after the Tate LaBianca murders. They're also suspected of killing Nancy Warren and Clyda Delaney, Marina Elizabeth Hab, Darwin Morrell Scott.
The list goes on and on, Joe. There's like 25 Mark Watts, more people.
Yeah, they're suspected of literally killing like 20 more people. So the Tate murders became national news on August 9th, 69, after the Polanski's housekeeper, Winifred Chapman, arrived for work that morning. On August 10th, detectives of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, which had jurisdiction in the Hinman case, informed Los Angeles Police Department detectives assigned to the Tate case of the bloody rioting in the Hinman's house. according to Vincent, but what's his Bugliosi? Because detectives believe the Tate murders were a consequence of a drug transaction. The Tate team initially ignored this and other evidence of similarities between the crimes.
What a dick.
Yep.
But do you know how they finally got caught?
Please explain.
I was going to ask. I was going to ask.
It would be a little quicker.
I'll speed this shit up. I will give it to you from my head.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Susan Atkins was locked into the Rose Brand jail, and she admitted that they were the ones who did the killing.
Wait, who? Susan?
Susan Atkins was in here, and she was the one who admitted it to both of them, to a fellow inmate. The inmate got frightened and went to the cops, turned evidence. The problem with that was, prior to her doing that, she was only incarcerated in prison because the cops had raided Spahn Ranch because they were stealing cars.
They still with this stealing car thing? Like, what the fuck?
They needed money. They were trying to raise money. And they stole cars, and they were trying to sell them or whatever. The cops got wind, locked them all up. If she doesn't admit to it, we might never know.
It was them.
There might have been more killings. But she admitted to it, and that's when they actually went forward and got people together. Then Linda Kasabian, because she wasn't involved in the murders, she turned state's evidence against Charlie, testified against the family. That whole charade was a joke because they did whatever they did. They did whatever they could to try to get a mistrial on that
situation. Oh, yeah. I was reading.
I mean, it's crazy.
They're attacking witnesses. They're attacking people on
the jury.
The jury.
Yeah.
Manson himself tried to attack the judge.
Yeah. I was going to ask, but did he try to like dolphin dive the judge?
Dolphin dive the judge. Yeah, he tried to do all that. And then in prison, everyone knows the
Now, when did they put? Wait, now because these people are in prison. I may have tuned out for a little bit, but did was Charlie also a part of those trials when they were convicting these people?
He had his own trial.
Oh, he had his own separate
trial. No. They were all tried together.
They were all tried together. Okay, that was pretty much my question.
Right. And the funny thing is, they all had one of the lawyers was found dead.
Like one of the lawyers that was defending the Manson?
Manson, because the Manson didn't like the defense he was getting. I mean, they would stand up in court and they would yell, "We don't need to plead guilty. We're not sure. We don't need no trial here. We're guilty." And then it was after stupid-ass Richard Nixon declared the Manson family guilty, Charles Manson, and put a big picture of him, and it says, "President declares him guilty." And that right there, you show that to the jury, you get a mistrial. They took that out in court. They were waving it around. The girls got up, start screaming. You know, we don't need a trial. The president says he's guilty, so he must be guilty. Drove Judge Oder fucking crazy.
Not to mention this prison. In prison, this motherfucker
Did not draw it. He carved it.
Carved a swastika in his forehead.
Yeah, he did that for the rest of his life. He had the girls that weren't on trial stay outside the courtroom 24 hours a day, sleeping on the sidewalk, shaving their heads. And then, you know, you just couldn't get around the courtroom or courthouse. People were... It was an insane time. And from inside the prison, this guy's still calling the shots. And the three girls stood together. You know, they ride or die. That's what they do. They, with Charlie. That's how it came down to it.
In 2013, Manson stated that he was bisexual, saying, "Sex to me is like going to the toilet. Whether it's a girl or not, it doesn't matter. I don't play that girl-guy shit. I'm not hung up in that game."
Mm-hmm.
The man says, "I like ass, I take it."
So he was basically in prison the rest of his life.
Yeah, he was never going to get out. He was never going to get out.
As far as the other key members, there's 9 key members of them. Susan Atkins.
Dead, I hope.
I believe she's
Susan
dead.
Susan Atkins is dead, yes.
Yes, good.
Yeah, she died from brain cancer in 2009.
Ooh, nice. That's a good one. All the drugs fried her brain, and now she's flying in the oven of hell.
Leslie Van Houten. She's 73 now. Van Houten was only 19. When she was charged for murdering LaBianca, during her time in prison, Manhattan publicly said she took responsibility for both of her murders and that the role she played in helping create Manson. During her 5 decades in prison, Van Houten had 23 parole hearings and was recommended for parole 5 times. But California Governors Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom vetoed each of those decisions. Newsom's final veto was overruled by state appeals court, and Van Houten was released from prison July 11th, 2023. Patricia Krenwinkel, let's go down, denied parole more than a dozen times. A 75-year-old has made recent claims that Manson had been abusing her before the multiple murders occurred. She was granted parole May 2022, but California Governor Gavin Newsom reversed the decision. Krenwinkel remains incarcerated with her next parole hearing scheduled for, it was scheduled for November 17th of 2023. And I believe she was also denied for that one too.
Nice, good.
Tex Watson, I believe, is dead.
Burning.
Nope.
No, he's not dead. Leading the charge in the Tate and LaBianca murders, Watson claimed he was the devil. As Anthony said, after the murders, he escaped to Texas and resisted being extradited to California for 9 months. Watson was convicted of murder in 1971 and is currently serving a life sentence in Sacramento, California. The 77-year-old has since turned to religion, becoming a minister, and earned a business degree. He has been denied parole 18 times and won't be eligible again until 2026. Bobby Beausoleil, 75, is serving a life sentence and spends his time creating music and selling art. After having previously rejected his parole request 18 times, the California Board of Parole recommended Beausoleil's release in 2019, but Newsom reversed that decision.
Nice.
Steve Clem Grogan.
He's out.
Although Grogan was originally sentenced to death, the presiding judge reduced his sentence to life in prison because he felt Grogan was too intellectually inept and high on drugs to have planned the murder. Grogan received parole in 85 after revealing to the authorities the location of Shay's remains. The 71-year-old currently lives in the Bay Area, where he plays music with several different bands. Bruce Davis. Bruce Davis was present during the murder of Gary Hinman and actively participated in the torture of the killing of Donald Shay. Although he was temporarily on the lam for the time, he turned himself in to authorities in 1970. Having become a preacher in prison, the 80-year-old is currently serving a life sentence and has been continuously denied parole, most recently in 2022, during which time the parole board said he lacked empathy.
Ironic that he's a pastor, right?
Yep. Linda Kasabian. Kasabian turned herself in December 1969 and received immunity after becoming a lead witness in the trials against Manson and his followers. She died on January 21st, 2023 at the age of 73. And Lynette Squeaky Fromm. In December 87, Fromm escaped from a West Virginia prison in an attempt to meet up with Manson, who she had heard developed cancer. She was captured in prison for several more years, but was granted parole in 2008. Fromm was released a year later, after which she moved into a home decorated with skulls, living with the ex-convict with her ex-convict boyfriend, who was obsessed with Manson. Now 74, Fromm published a book about her life in 2018 and said in an interview the next year, "Was I in love with Charlie? Yeah, oh, I still am. I don't think you fall out of love." Yeah, and that's where the 9 people who are most associated with the Manson family are today.
You forgot something really important, too. That last girl, she pulled a gun on Gerald Ford.
We talked about that. I believe we talked about that, didn't we? Mm. Yeah. Anthony said that. Or Dad said that.
Dad
one of them
said that.
That's so wild.
For this episode, again, these things actually did happen. There's no, is this real? This is real.
Okay, no. The conspiracy would be, do you believe that the CIA had full knowledge of
Well,
Manson
we only talked
shit.
A little bit about the CIA. That's the thing, though. Like, you could sit there and say that maybe they did, because they're the ones who really start. I mean, he was fucked up before the CIA even got his hands on him. You know what it is? It's like giving a tiger meth.
What?
Cocaine bear.
Cocaine bear.
It's cocaine
like,
bear.
Like it's this thing is fucked up to begin with.
It's MK Ultra.
You think it's MK Ultra?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Dad.
I'm just going to say I'm going to say he was a very charismatic leader, and he knew how to use drugs very, very well. And the time, you got to understand the time we're in here.
Summer of Love.
This is the time where everything was okay. It was okay to be who you wanted to be. Yeah. So do I think it was MK Ultra? You know what? I'm not going to diss. I'm not going to say no. I don't know. Okay, but from the evidence that I
start making more music
had,
again, man. It's been a minute.
Yeah, and Mary Bruner, she was sentenced to 20 years in life. Forgot about Mary Bruner. Very important Mary Bruner was to the family. Although she was smart enough to stay away from the murders. She's out. She was involved in a shootout in Hawthorne, California. In 1977, she was paroled.
Ooh.
That's a side note. Again, getting back to what Wes had said, no, I don't think it was MK Ultra, although I don't personally have any kind of knowledge to that. I just, in my opinion, knowing Charlie and following and studying Charlie for the better part of 40 years, I would say he was very charismatic. I mean, interviews, sometimes he could do interviews with people to make you go, this guy's a comedian. He's funny as hell. And then you got to snap back and go, wait a minute. He's a fucking nitwit.
Some of the shit okay. He did come up with was hysterical, I'll be honest.
It's funny. It's not. There was a book released a couple years ago. I got it up there somewhere. It was a.
The man has many books.
It was called Manson in His Own Words, and this guy allowed Manson to say whatever he wanted to say, and I found the book to be funny. Some of the stuff Manson came out.
He really believed in this shit though.
A lot of stuff like he would say, "Man, I didn't make anybody commit any killing. They committed it," you know. Leaving out a very important part that you drove him to the place, you tied up the people.
You fed him LSD.
It's like the dog didn't. I didn't kill.
You can bring the horse to water.
I didn't maul the toddler. The dog did. Yeah, but you twisted the dog's balls in a vice and you kicked it a few times.
And you know, having said all that, Manson was crazy. Manson was maybe he's crazily smart. I don't know. Whatever
you want.
Brought
the horse to water. Then
he still has.
The horse,
he still has followers today.
Nope.
People still believe in what he says. The only problem I had during that time, I got to tell you, is Vincent Bugliosi himself. He goes around like he's some kind of an expert on everything.
We're not going to sit here and bash this man, are we?
No. But what bothered me about him, he convicted Charlie Manson. My 12-year-old grandson could have convicted Charlie Manson because Charlie Manson convicted himself. He didn't need to do much. And he goes around like he's like the greatest of all. Then you start jumping all over the Kennedy assassination.
Better, not better than OJ lawyer.
Man, just shut the fuck up. I never wanted to hear Bugliosi.
I'll be honest.
Great book, but he was a fucking
OJ ass. Got off.
Exactly.
Manson didn't, you know?
Technicalities, you know.
I'm telling you, man. They are a bitch.
They are. So, that's this week's episode. Again, we all knew it was going to be a very interesting episode.
It was interesting.
Especially knowing that Wes didn't know any of this.
No, yeah. Like, listen. Every time I hear about Charlie Manson, all I think is like, yo, this motherfucker, like, I hear he's a cult leader, but like, for some reason, there's a, like, that tie to like him being a serial killer in there as well. I don't know if that's like a misconception or something.
He's only killed, I think, one or two people.
Wasn't convicted of killing anyone.
Yeah, he wasn't convicted of killing anyone. I mean,
yeah, that's the big thing that Dad's always made sure we knew. We'd be like, oh, Charlie Manson, you know, he killed a bunch of people. And Dad'd be like, no. He didn't kill anybody.
He raped, though.
He was not put in prison for killing anyone.
He was raping.
Uncle Charlie did not kill anybody.
He was raping, though. There was a lot of rape.
He didn't kill anybody at the La Bianca. Accessory for murder? Yes.
We're not going to deny that he didn't rape people, though.
Technicalities.
I'm not going to do that. Anyway. It's all about technicalities.
Just saying.
So, next week, guys.
I fed the dog LSD, but that's all.
Next week, I'm so happy for next week.
Yes.
It's the Simpsons prophecies.
Yes. Now Dad, you might not know this, but this is an internet meme that
the Simpsons apparently have told
has predicted a lot of things.
It predicted Donald Trump.
Well,
can we do this next week? It's kind of late here and I'm freezing.
I'm just throwing a preview.
It's the thing where it's like, you know, there's 300 episodes, whatever. There's 30 years worth of the Simpsons. So when you look back and you go, wait a minute. Oh my God. It's like, yeah, there's 300 fucking episodes. You're going to get one or two things right.
So now we know what his take is on for next week's episode.
We'll see.
All right. So that's what we have. So anything else for Uncle Charlie and the Manson family?
Fuck these niggas.
I don't think I could put that up there, but okay.
You could bleep it out.
Pope.
Fuck these
No, I mean, Charlie's always going to be interesting. He made his mark in history. He's someone that him and by extension his family, they're notorious. You know, they're just like any other
infamous.
Yeah, the infamous killers that are out there. Like, it's, you put Jack the Ripper, you could put Ted Bundy, Charlie Manson. They're all sharing, you know, they're all sharing brunch down in hell, you know.
Wise words about Uncle Charlie from Uncle Touchy. So, thank you guys for joining us this week. We will catch you guys next week for the Simpsons prophecies. Everyone say goodnight.
Forgot to me. Adios, motherfuckers.
We'll catch you guys next week. Remember, everybody, question everything. Goodnight. Everybody's JC3, and I just want to say thank you for listening to all of our shows. If you want to keep up to date with everything Is This Real or Green Hour Media, go to our social media accounts at Is This Real PC for TikTok, at Green Hour Media for YouTube, Is This Real Podcast for Facebook, and at Is This Real Podcast, all one word, for Instagram. You will be able to keep up with everything Is This Real or Green Hour Media.